Well, it is a delight, like I said, for us to be here. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a few minutes and let you get to know us personally. And I'll tell you a little bit about our testimony and what God has done for us. I grew up, most of you can probably tell by now that I'm not from around here. I grew up a little further south of the Mason-Dixon line in North Carolina. I was born and raised in High Point, North Carolina. Spent most of my life there, and I was brought up in church and raised in Independent Baptist Church most all my life. In fact, my great-great-grandfather helped start the church that I was saved in. And it started out in the pine thickets there in High Point, back when it used to be all farming community. And they put up a brush arbor and had a circuit riding preacher and the whole nine yards. And eventually it became Pine Grove Baptist Church, and my grandfather got saved as a result of that. My dad got saved, and I got saved on the altar there at Pine Grove Baptist Church when I was about 5 years old. So I grew up in church, and my dad brought me up in church. My dad was always very active and very faithful. He was a deacon. He was a youth director. He was assistant pastor, and of course, he was what I consider a full-time layman. He worked a full-time job, had his own business, and he also worked at the church full-time. And did that for many years, and I went to a Christian school. God called me to preach when I was about 12 years old, and at that time we were in a different church, but God called me to preach, and 12 to 16, even though I was in a Christian school, I kind of struggled with that just a little bit. And at about the age of 16, I made a very tragic mistake, and I decided that I knew better than God, and I knew better than my mom and dad, and I knew better than my pastor. So at 16 years of old, I turned a different trail, and began to seek my own way in life and my own will, and set out and went and joined the military. Was in the Army for about 7 years, and I enjoyed being a soldier, to be quite honest with you. But truth of the matter is, I had no business being there. God had other plans for me. And it wasn't until I was 26 years old that God got a hold of my heart, and I decided that I did not know better than God, and I did not know better than my parents and my pastor. And March the 9th, 1997, 26-year-old young man, I'd just gotten out of the service, and my dad was helping a friend of his who just started a church in Asheboro, North Carolina. And I went to the altar one Sunday morning and got things right with God. From that point on, I've not turned back. Amen. And I realized that I was a fool, to be quite honest with you, and I realized that my way does not work. And let me just say, you know, your way will never work. It's only God's way that works for us. And I had to go through not only grade school and high school and Bible college, but also went to the School of Hard Knocks. And I learned a very important lesson in life, is always follow the Lord. And so March the 9th, 1997, I was single, never been married, and I got right. Matter of fact, it was a church about this size of an auditorium. And I came forward, and I got right with God, and I told the Lord, I said, wherever you want me to go, whenever you want me to do, that's exactly what I'll do for the rest of my life. I said, Lord, it's your way or no way from now on. And so I did that. Now, little did I know what God had in store for me, but I began to become very busy there in church, and I began to get involved in the soul winning. Now, up until that time, I never really knew what soul winning was. We were always Independent Baptists, but not what I would consider fundamental. I grew up in a realm to where they were a little more evangelistic. Standards were not quite the same as what ours would be. But they did believe in salvation by grace through faith and did believe on the King James Bible. But so it wasn't until I was in my mid-20s that I realized what soul winning was and realized my responsibility to share the gospel with those that are around me in the lost and dying world. And so I began to do that, began to get very involved in the church. And then the inevitable happened. About 2 years later, God said, okay, I want you to go to Bible college. Now, Bible college is a wonderful thing, except for the fact that I stopped liking school somewhere around the third grade. So I was not interested at all in going back to school. Nonetheless, I made a promise and a vow to God, and I said, okay, I said, I'll go. Now, at that time, what had happened was I was actually living in the mountains of North Carolina, and my dad's friend who had started that church had left and went and took another church in the mountains. Make a long story short, I was helping him, and I loved the mountains. I loved the Blue Ridge Mountains. In fact, if any of you ever want to know what heaven's going to be like, just take a trip to the Blue Ridge Mountains. You'll get a pretty good idea. I love it there. We took vacations there when I was growing up, and I spent 2 years of my life working in the church there. Wanted to go back there. Wanted to just die there. And so I was working there in the mountains, beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains, and God picked me up and set me down in Northwest Indiana. Now, look, I know you folks from Indiana, and I'm not trying to cast stones at your geographical location here, but Northwest Indiana, Chicago area, Hammond area, is not the Blue Ridge Mountains. So needless to say, now missionaries talk about culture shock. That was my first bout with culture shock. The people are different. Now out here in the country, you know, you folks are normal. But you get up next to the city, people are just strange. They just are. And I found this out in my travels. The further north you go, the more rude people tend to be. Now, not church people. Granted, you know, church people generally are very good hypocrites. And so they put all that aside. But needless to say, I moved to Indiana, went to Hiles Anderson College like the Lord told me to do. And I moved there in January of 1998. And I'm a carpenter by trade. And so I made my way through Bible college. Running my own business most of the time. I worked for another fellow for a little while, but most of the time I was working for myself. And for the life of me, I can't figure out why in the world I'd be changing out windows with it 15 degrees below zero. So there's a lot of memories that I have about Bible college, and not all of them are spiritual memories. But I was there in January, and that following Christmas, that first year that I was there, God began to change my life even once more. And that's when this lady came into my life. And I'll tell you a little bit about her. She grew up in the St. Louis area. And so that's been quite a challenge for me. She grew up in what I call a casserole home in the Midwest. And so I've had to teach her spiritual things like pinto beans and cornbread and red-eye gravy and cathead biscuits and all that kind of stuff. She's learning. She's doing well. And but she grew up around the St. Louis area on the Illinois side of the river there. And she, too, grew up in church, and was her mom and dad was very faithful in church. Her mom was the pianist there. And she, in fact, her and her mom started the first bus route in their church there, a little town called Cahokia, and they started it with their van. And today, I think they have three or four buses that they run. And so anyway, she was very involved, went to a Christian school there, and then she too went to Hiles Anderson College. Now, she was a little bit more spiritual than I was. She went to Bible college right out of high school, and she went to Hiles Anderson. And while she was there, she met a man by the name of Greg Sikma. Now, Greg was a member at First Baptist. He grew up there, and he was, at this time, he'd been through college. He was a deacon there. He ran his own business, and they were married and had four children, and God decided to take Greg home to heaven in February of 1998. And he had a blood disorder, and really it was kind of all of a sudden. It was a matter of about 6 weeks, and he was in heaven, and left Michelle here with four children. And so here she was by herself with the four children, and she gives her testimony quite often, and she says, you know, I grew up knowing God, but I never really needed God until that point in my life. And that's so true for many of us. A lot of us make a ritual of going to church and even a ritual of reading our Bible and praying. But there's a very big difference between knowing God and needing God. And God has used her greatly. In fact, she has written a book that is telling the things that has helped her through that time. And she has written a lot of music through that time of her life that's been a blessing to many people. But God brought us together. God was good to her. He brought me along. And he brought us together in December of 1999. And now you have to understand, it's kind of a long story. But the bottom line was this. Here I was single. I'd never been married. I'd never had children. And now God is asking me to jump into this situation to where there's a wife and four children, you know, all in one wedding ceremony there. And I told the Lord, I said, I'd like to have a family, but I kind of like to do it the old-fashioned way, you know, just one child at a time. But the Lord wouldn't have it. The Lord, I know that God brought us together. And so September of 2000, we were married. Got married on my 30th birthday. Now, fellas, I did that because I did not ever want to forget my anniversary. And so I knew if it was on my birthday, there was no chance I'd ever forget it. And so I wouldn't be in trouble. But we were married, and we, again, this is my second bout with culture shock. Moving into a house of four children. And I thought I was a pretty good Christian. Until I moved in with these children. You know, you wake up in the middle of the night craving your Fruity Pebbles or Apple Jacks, and they're all gone because the kids ate them for breakfast. You know, the milk is gone, the cookies are gone. I stopped at the store. You stop at the gas station, and like all good Baptist preachers, I like a Mountain Dew and a Snicker bar, that big sugar and caffeine kick. And I would stop, and I'll never forget the first time I stopped. I got gas, I went in, I got my Mountain Dew and my Snickers. And I'm sitting in the driver's seat, and I feel these eyeballs, you know. And drooling all over the back of my shoulder. So life changed for me. I had to change dramatically. And the Lord was very gracious to me. They've put up with me. You got to understand something. I came right out of the military and went into Bible college and then into a family situation. And for the life of me, I couldn't figure out why these seven-year-olds would not react like my soldiers did in the military. Couldn't get them to do push-ups. Couldn't get them to march in line straight. None of that stuff. So I had a lot of learning to do. God was very gracious, and God taught me a lot of things. And God has put us together, knit our hearts together as a family. Of course, I adopted the children right away. And God knit our hearts together as a family. We began to serve the Lord together. And then God's given us two more since then. Savannah, of course, our first one together, and then Michaela. Now, let me tell you something about Michaela. Whatever's left of this building when we leave, consider yourself blessed. I think Michaela's kind of my payback for all those years that I ran from the Lord. She is quite unique, to say the least. Very outgoing, not shy whatsoever. But she has been a trial of my patience, as if God has not tried my patience enough. But we've had a wonderful time serving the Lord together. I graduated in 2003 from Bible college and made it all the way through. And we began our deputation trail, as you saw in the video there. We were originally headed to South America, and we felt like that's where God told us to go. And so we went out on deputation for 18 months, headed to South America, and we'd made several trips there and had a piece of property there. We're getting ready to to close on and put some money on. And all of a sudden, the Lord says, "No, stop. I don't want you going." I said, "Okay, God." Now, remember, I made a vow to the Lord back in 1997. I said, "God, I'll go wherever you want me to go and do whatever you want me to do." And so when God told us to stop, I didn't really understand it, but I didn't argue with God. I said, "Lord, whatever way you'd lead me, that's the way I'll go, that's the way I'll follow." And so I followed the Lord's direction, and of course, Brother Scott is my pastor, and so I went to him and told him what was going on, and he said, "Well, let me pray about it, and let's give this some thought." You know, there are times in my, I am independent by all stretches of the imagination, and I believe in getting a hold of the Lord for myself, and I believe in getting answers from God, from the Bible, but there are times when I like to have someone I could just say, "You know what, you make the decision." And this is one of those times. I had no idea what God wanted us to do, so I went to my pastor, and he said, "Let me pray about it." Well, I still had meetings. I was still on deputation, and didn't figure it was very smart to cancel my meetings, and so I continued on for about 6 weeks, and literally we went to churches and said, "Well, folks, I'm Mike Leonard, and this is my family, and we are missionaries to, your guess is as good as mine." And to be honest with you, I just honest with them. I told them what God was doing in our lives, and believe it or not, we had two or three meetings during that time, and two of those churches still took us on, and so that was a blessing. So I knew that Lord was still in it, and Lord was His hand was upon us. And so then Brother Scott calls, and he says, "Well," he said, "he wanted me to have a meeting with him." And so I went, had a meeting with him. He says, "Would you consider going to China?" I said, "Well," I said, "if that's what you think God wants us to do, that's what I'll do." And I said, "When do you want us to go?" He said, "Can you be ready in 6 weeks?" I said, "Wow." I said, "Okay, we'll give it a shot." And we had to have immunizations. Now, I already had mine. I'd been traveling overseas for a few years. And so, but as far as the children and my wife, we had to have visas and passports and immunizations and shots and all this on the list goes. So we did all that. I canceled my meetings for the rest of the year. We did all that. We went to China. And we served there for a year working with the China missions team. And I helped them there. Like I said, I'm a carpenter by trade, so I helped them a lot with their construction projects. My wife taught music there. Also taught in the school. I taught English. I came back to First Baptist and told my college English teacher that I taught English, and I thought he was going to pass out. he said, "They must be." Brother Fish was definitely surprised. He just kind of laughed when I told him. But I taught English. Of course, they don't speak English, so they didn't know any different. Was able to help them there and was able to, in fact, while we were there, we saw my family alone was able to lead 64 Chinese to Christ in that year we were there, and made some wonderful friends there. And then while we were there, that's when God opened up this door of opportunity for us to go to Belize. And now you have to understand something. I am not a cold weather person. Days like today, I want to find a hole somewhere and just hibernate. But, you know, in the winters in China, the winter that we were there, now the Chinese laughed at me because they said it was a mild winter, but for 8 weeks it was 30 degrees below zero. So when the Lord said, "Would you consider going to Belize?" I said, "Yes, sir, absolutely." No questions asked. Average temperature, 85 degrees. That I can handle. But truth of the matter is, it was the Lord's will for us. Temperature had nothing to do with it. I'm just glad that it was a warmer climate. And we came back home in June of 2006. 2 weeks later, my wife and I took our first trip to Belize, and a lot of that video that you saw there about Belize was taken then. And we were amazed at all the Chinese. We got off the plane, no joke. We got off the plane, and the city we're going to be working in, the capital city, is about an hour and a half from the airport. So we got into our city there where the hotel was, and actually it was dark that first night when we got there. So it was the next morning. We were looking for a restaurant, and we're riding around this town, and it's not very developed. And so we're riding around looking for a restaurant, and all we can find is Chinese restaurants. I told my wife, I said, check our ticket to make sure we didn't get off in Hong Kong instead of Belize. I had no idea. And what has happened is the Chinese are looking for ways to get out of China, and those that are business-minded and those that are entrepreneurs, they save their money and they use their smarts and they do what they can to get to other countries where they have a little bit more freedom to capitalism is basically what it is. They want to be able to run and operate businesses. And a lot of times it's very difficult for them to get into America, although I know there's a lot of them here, but it's very difficult. So they'll go to Canada or they'll go to Belize or they'll go to some other country that's easier for them to get in. Well, many of them have gone to the country of Belize. Belize is a melting pot, as you saw in the video. And so many of them are there. They've started businesses. And we communicated with some of them. Now, granted, being in China 1 year and being the linguist that I am, I did not master the language of Mandarin. And in fact, a lot of these people are actually from Taiwan, so they speak a little different Chinese. It's Cantonese. But we were able to communicate just a little bit. And once they found out that we lived in China for an entire year, it was an immediate open door of opportunity. And they were very eager to get to know us and so forth. And so we are really praying that God will send us someone that can speak Mandarin or Cantonese as well as English. Now, a lot of the times we will be able to communicate with them through their children. Their teenage children speak very good English. So we're looking forward to that opportunity. We're looking forward to being able to reach those Chinese people there. And possibly maybe even some of them, the men, being called to preach and going back to China and starting churches. It's much easier there for a Chinese to, I'll say, get away with having a church than it is for an American. Anyway, that's an opportunity we believe the Lord has ordained for us, and so we're looking forward to that. I have taken another trip since then, last January. It's been a year ago, and trying to just get an idea of the people. And the first trip my wife and I took, it was mostly all business. We literally were there for, 8 days, 10 days? And we went literally into every market, every store, every hardware store, every lumber yard, the telephone office, everywhere with a pencil and paper, and we wrote down everything that we thought that we might need there to get an idea of what it's going to cost to live in Belize. Now, you can go on the internet and you can find all kinds of false information. And so we went and did it ourselves, and we figured out what it would cost for us to live there. The second trip I took last January, I went, a friend of mine went with me. I just wanted to get to know the people. And so we traveled around the area there within an hour or so radius of the capital, and meeting people, witnessing to people, had two people saved while we were there. And found out that there's a lot of religion in Belize, and just a lot of different thoughts and ideas of what Christianity is, and a lot of ideas of what Christ and God is. But the people are very open to the gospel, very open to the truth. They've been lied to for years and years and years. The Catholic Church is very dominant there, along with other religions. Jehovah's false witnesses are very dominant there. And as a matter of fact, it's almost as if everyone that I tried to witness to, it seemed like they were part of the Jehovah's Witness, false witnesses, I call them. And boy, very, very, very indoctrinated in what they believed. The ones that I talked to would put most Baptists to shame as far as knowing what they believe and why they believe it. Very difficult. But there are others there, many others, that are searching for truth and looking for truth. And so we're excited about the opportunity to be able to carry that truth to them. And I was telling Brother Riser this morning that Brother Scott does have an idea or a plan or a dream to put a Hiles Anderson College there, not just for the nationals, but also to train our young people here, maybe from Hiles Anderson College, and basically any young person that wants to go to the mission field and get some training on the mission field, a semester or a year or whatever. Long-term goals, that's our goal, is to set up a training college there, a Bible Institute, where young people can come, or middle-aged or elderly people, or anybody that wants to come and serve and learn on the mission field. We've got about 5 minutes left, and so I'll open it up to questions if anybody has any questions about our ministry or Belize or China or anything at all. Anybody have any questions? Yes, sir. The economy in Belize is very poor. Just like any, there used to be British Honduras. In fact, a lot of people, they say, Belize, where's that? And I say, British Honduras. Now, they kind of date themselves when they ask me that question. But they were owned by the British up until 1981, and so then they got their independence. Just like any other country that's gotten their independence economically, they basically have failed, and so the economy is very poor. And the people, there's not a lot of job opportunity available. The thing that keeps the country afloat is tourism. In fact, if you go home and look online or if you look for information on Belize, you're going to see all these beautiful islands out on the coast. You're going to think, oh, yeah, right, a missionary to Belize. Trust me, folks, there's more to it than just the islands you're going to find on the Internet. But the economy is very poor. A lot of their industry there is citrus. They have a lot of orange groves and pineapple and bananas. And they do a lot of fishing out on the coast, but very few job opportunities, and they make very little. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. It seems like a carpenter, a craftsman, would probably make, $10 a day, maybe. Does that sound right? I can't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but they don't get paid a lot of money. And there's not a lot of job opportunities available. Now they have colleges; they'll send their young people to college and they'll teach them computers and things like that. But then it's funny because the government will offer grants for their young people to go to college to learn about technology. But then there's no jobs, and so the young people can't pay back the loan because they don't have a job, and so their economy is really struggling. And really, tourism, my personal opinion, is helping keep it afloat. Well, that and Chavez just gave them a big chunk of change from down in Venezuela. I'm not real excited about their ties to him. But nonetheless, they are struggling, and they do take money from whoever will give it to them to help keep them afloat. But they're trying. They want to be successful. They want to strive. And they're very open to people coming in and helping their people. That is a benefit for us, because once they see that we're there to help their people, and, of course, our primary objective is to start a church and to provide them with the gospel and help them to grow spiritually. But on the other hand, we also want to help them physically. We also want to help them in any way we can to provide for their families and so forth. That won't be our main objective, but if that opportunity arises, we will do that. And so the government and the country as a whole welcomes people like us that come and help their country. Any other questions? Yes, sir. It is a parliamentary-type democracy, still based upon, like, the British government. They have different people groups, and the people groups get elected, and then that party will then choose a prime minister to represent that party. And so it is a parliamentary-type democracy. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am. Belize is about 300,000 people. I can't remember the land mass. It's not any bigger land-wise than, probably not any bigger than Illinois or Indiana. Small land mass, about 300,000 people. But like I say, a lot of people are moving in and taking an interest in the country, not just from Central America, but from all over the world. And so we really believe that in the future, it's going to be an asset to reaching other parts of the world because of the different diversity of people that's moving in. And about 10 or 15,000 in our immediate reachable area, give or take, we'll have to travel. Probably will not be one large church in the capital city because the people are so spread out. We will probably end up starting several churches in the different villages and towns and so forth around the country there. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
As far as you know, is there any other independent churches
that you know of? There was... To my knowledge, I have not personally met anyone that is like us, and there's a lot of people who call themselves Baptist. In fact, when we were there, we met a guy that was independent Baptist, but the word fundamental was not in his dictionary. Nice guy, helped us a lot, but the guitars and the drum set and all that just didn't go over well with me. But he's not there any longer. I have heard that there are a couple other missionaries, independent, fundamental independent Baptist missionaries there. I've not met them. There is another graduate from Hiles Anderson, a young guy who just graduated last year. In fact, he just got married this summer. He and his wife went on honeymoon to Belize, and that's where they're going to be going. So to my knowledge, there may be three or four of us there. But other than that, not that I know of. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
Are you getting any contact?
We will eventually. Brother Scoff has a lot on his agenda. They've just, I'm not sure how much everybody outside of First Baptist keeps up with it, but they've got the team in Ghana rolling. In fact, they just, this coming fall, they'll start the Hiles Anderson College in Ghana. And then also Thailand is next. They have a team getting ready to go there, and so then India after that. So Belize is on the list somewhere, and what he will do is he will send a team down more than likely for the purpose of the college and for the purpose of the training institute. I will say this, there is a man, you may remember him, Jose Perez, who was in college about the same time we were. He's actually from Belize, came to America, got saved as a teenager. He was in his late 20s and went to Hiles Anderson College and met a girl from Nicaragua. They were married. They're now living in Hammond, and they have three children. Well, God has been burdening his heart to go back to Belize and help his own people. He has no desire to pastor. He just wants to help someone. And a tremendous soul winner, tremendous servant, just a servant's heart. And he's been talking with Brother Scott. He and I have been talking, and he is seriously praying about going back to Belize with his family, with us, to help us get started. And so if you would help us pray about that, that will be a great start for us if that family comes. And but eventually, Brother Scott is wanting to put a team of people there for the purpose of the Bible Institute. Oh, yes. Brother Perez, of course, being from there, has over 200 family members in our area. And he went home for Christmas this last year for the first time in like 16 or 18 years and won two of his family members to the Lord. And he said, boy, my family's just searching for truth. And, you know, they're so excited about the idea of a church coming. And so that's going to be a real big boost for us getting started, the fact that we have those contacts. And also, we, along our trails of deputation, had a guy call us. He's Mennonite. Now, there's a lot of Mennonites in Belize. This guy grew up in Belize, has a lot of family members there. He went to Canada. He got saved. He's in a fundamental independent Baptist church, if I'm not mistaken, pastored by one of our graduates from Hiles Anderson. And he contacted me and said, boy, we're really interested in your work. And in fact, he wants to help us go to Belize, wants to help us move, wants to help us get established, wants to introduce us to his family. And so the Lord just opened up all kinds of contacts for us to be able to get started right away. So we're real excited about that. All right, I believe our time is up, Brother Riser.